Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WEBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining me on the Commons today, I have two lovely ladies, both from Maryland and both with the Maryland Homeowners Association. In the studio with me is my friend Pat Wigington, and online is Jean Ketley. Jean is the president of the oldest homeowner organization that we know of in the country, the Maryland Homeowners Association. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me today.
Lovely to be here.
Jean, you've had some success lately with legislation. You introduced, MHA introduced and sponsored legislation, and as far as I know, you're the only ones who managed to get anything through this year. You want to tell us a little bit about your bill and what happened and why you...
Certainly. What this bill, which was called HB 137, does is it allows homeowners to request information about their home via the mail rather than going in and having to examine books and records in managers' offices. What it does is it gives them, it sort of empowers them to know what is going on in their condominium or HOA. And this information must be sent within 21 days of receiving a written request. It can be sent by email, which really shouldn't cost anything, or mail, or by personal delivery. And there is a cost. It's what's charged by Maryland courts, and that's 50 cents per page. But when you think that someone does not have to take time off from work to go into an office to just see what's going on, because many times people aren't given minutes, they're not given financial reports, now they can get all these things. The cost really isn't probably that much, although we initially endorsed 10 cents per page, but that didn't go through.
Any concern? I mean, are there any limits on how much they can charge? Because what I've seen in the past is typical HOAs, condominiums, it's financial warfare. And I've seen people give, I've seen associations make copies of checks, putting like 100 or 200 canceled checks with just the front of the check on one page and then the back of the check on the other page, instead of putting three checks on each page and then doing the backside on consecutive pages, thus running up the bill for the homeowner. I mean, I've seen homeowners having to pay hundreds of dollars in copying fees. So were there any limits that were placed on how much an association could charge on that?
Well, the limit is 50 cents a page, but you brought up a good point. And if managers' offices or associations start playing games with the intent of this law, I do believe a complaint to the Attorney General would be in order. This was meant to get information out there, not to try to penalize people for wanting the information.
Well, I understand. I know why you'd want to do that, but again, it's experience and having seen the way associations and managers particularly deal with homeowners that they don't really want to deal with, really.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just penalize them.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wondered if there was any caps built in.
In terms of total cost, no.
Yeah.
No, it's per page.
It's per page.
And I would recommend any association that only one person order things and then pass it around to the rest of the homeowners. Like, everyone doesn't have to get it and pay the same thing. To keep costs down, people need to share information. But this should allow them access to it. The cost, we'll have to see what happens.
Can they go into the office if they want to?
Yes.
They can.
Yes, so they still can do that.
They can go in and they can inspect things and they can take their own copier with them and they can take their
right.
own camera, and so it shouldn't cost them anything.
All of that is still in effect, yes.
Anything that's withheld?
Only things having to do with privileged information, medical records and things like that.
But in other words... Is MHA getting a lot of complaints from homeowners that they're not getting this information?
Oh, yes. That's why we did this. We actually had several homeowners that testified in support of this. And it is associations playing games. I mean, it's unreasonable harassment of someone who wants to find out what's going on in the association. And so, yes, and that's and we hope this will do something to alleviate that particular problem. But it was the associations and managers that gave us the tools to put this legislation in place.
How's that?
They misuse their authority.
Okay.
I mean, charging people hundreds of dollars so someone can sit next to you while you're looking at the records, that's a misuse. Records should be available, much like the statement for my IRA is sent to me. It should be a cost of doing business. And I hope this will help towards that.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little anecdote now.
Mm-hmm.
Some years ago when the Council for Homeowners Rights was a viable organization, one of our members actually sent in a request to Reston saying that you claim in your governing documents or in the declaration that the purpose of the association is to protect property values.
Mm-hmm.
That means that what you're doing, the purpose is to protect the assets and my investment. And like any other investment, and you were talking about it, Jean, right now.
That's right.
That, you know, your IRA sends you a periodic report on how well your investments are doing. He requested the same report.
Mm-hmm.
And this just absolutely threw Reston into a big bind. They didn't quite know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I could see that.
I mean, maybe that's something that we still should keep in mind and maybe have them send us a report periodically telling us what
they... I think that's a great idea. I think minutes of board meetings, my personal opinion is minutes of board meetings should automatically go to every member. And lots of people put them up on the web and put them in newsletters. So it really stands out when you have an association that doesn't do it. And I do think there should be a report of what's in the reserves as of this month, that kind of stuff. It should go to every member.
And how well the value of your property is doing compared to similar properties that are not in an HOA.
That would be nice, too. I also, this is an aside, but the FHA now has new regulations for approving loans to condominiums. And they have rules such as, this came out about a week ago, that a reserve study must have been done no more than 12 months ago, or else you don't get a loan.
Oh, really?
Yes. And also that no more than 15% of the units can be in arrears. If that's more than that, you don't get a loan. So I think there's a governmental pressure for people to shape up a bit in how they handle their associations.
Well, in the current economic times where you have a lot of foreclosures and you have
mm-hmm.
a lot of problems, that's going to make getting financing very, very difficult.
I know, but associations have to come up with solutions. I mean, they absolutely have to, and I do agree that maybe it would make it harder for some people. But I do believe things like doing a reserve study is doable, so it must be done. And people need to know, that's a good way of knowing what the status of your association, your home, the development is. So to me, it's a plus, not a negative.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
So what else have you got in the pipeline? I know Pat's going to talk a little bit about the insurance that she worked on in just a minute, but what else, Jean, have you got planned for MHA in the coming months? What are you going to be working on?
Well, we've actually discussed that, and we have three priorities. This might change a bit, but right now the highest priority is foreclosure assessments, to try to help these associations where people have stopped paying their assessments, that when a unit is sold, the new owner pays 6 months of the assessments that the old owner incurred. This was introduced last year. It didn't fly, but I do think it's necessary, even if just for this time period, even if it had a time tap on it.
Why the new owners?
Interesting, isn't it? There are all sorts of liens associated with a property that need to be paid before the new owner takes effect. This would just be a different kind of lien. And it is somewhat controversial. I mean, I must admit that. But it could be very helpful to keeping associations alive. The second is just to have reserve studies done. And just when I read off the FHA stuff, it looks like every association is going to have to do them anyway. This would a law that would require reserve studies be done, but not only be done, but a summary be sent to each homeowner.
Jane, going back to the six-month assessments, there was a bill in Florida that didn't make it because the banking industry really lobbied very hard against it. But when you have a bank that forecloses on a unit in an HOA, whether it's a condo or single family or whatever, the bank then owns it. Why is it that the bank is not making those payments instead of trying to get it out of a new member who may just barely be qualifying to buy the property, and then you're adding 6 months' worth of assessments onto their thing?
I don't know. The bank should be making the payments, really. And I don't know how they managed to get out of it. It's one of those mistakes.
Well, I know that the bill insisted that the banks pay 6 months to the associations, the bankers in Florida. This was a bill that was introduced by Representative Julia Rabina, and it did not pass because the bankers really lobbied very, very hard to make sure that the bill failed. I don't have a problem if a bank forecloses and owns the property for the bank to pay 6 months, but
no, neither do I. You might ask Pat about this, since she is sort of experienced.
Jane, I was going to jump in here, but I don't have the answer to that either. But what I think that the listeners should know is that often in condominiums, more so than homeowners associations, there's often a very large monthly assessment,
right,
which includes utilities. So if someone is 6 months behind, you're looking at maybe $3,000 or $4,000 that they are into the association. And they're actually living there rent-free and receiving their heat and their air conditioning and their water. The point that we've made to the bankers who are lobbying against this year after year is that the condominium or the homeowners association is actually keeping up the property for the bank. It's not like many of these foreclosed homes where when they go to sell it, the appliances have been taken out and the plumbing fixtures in the bathroom have been ripped off the wall, and damages have been done to the home. These homes are maintained because they're within an association, and so everyone's fees are carrying these people that are not paying. Someone needs to step up and pay some of these assessments that are being shared by all the homeowners when someone doesn't pay.
Well, I agree with you. I just don't see that it should be the new owner. I mean, they weren't there, and they didn't receive the stuff. Go after the banks if the banks own the property.
Shu, really, I think it's easier to go after the new owner than the bankers.
I'm sure it's a whole lot easier to go after the new owner, but, I mean, as a consumer group.
I understand. There's no easy answer on this one.
Well, I know that it's something that, associations across the country are having to deal with and are facing. But
well, and also with the economy the way it is and housing prices going down, the bank's not even going to be getting back the money that they have loaned.
Oh, I know.
So the ones that are going to be out is the common interest housing, where the other homeowners are expected to pick up the tab. It's not fair.
I agree it's not fair, and I think maybe one of the things that perhaps, this is a lesson learned, and I don't know, MHA may want to jump on this bandwagon, is stop bundling everything. You know, when you move into an association, your fees cover water and they cover utilities and they cover internet and they cover cable and they cover, you know, satellite TV and all of that. Just make everybody responsible for their own. So if you don't pay your water bill, you get the water bill cut off, and then it's between the water company and, or the electricity company and the owner, as opposed to having the homeowners or the association having to deal with, you know, with another.
That's
one
a great idea. With the new places, I think that that mainly works that way. But in the old associations, old buildings that were converted, built in the 60s and converted in the 80s, say, you have a master meter, and you don't have that choice.
They can be unbundled as well.
Unbundled and make them individual meters for a large capital expense.
Yeah, lots of associations are trying to do just that, but it does cost a lot of money to go to individual meters. But they know that that would be the best thing to do.
I know that in my association they had master meters years ago that were sort of unbundled. But, you know, it goes beyond the water and the utilities. Those are necessities, but you don't really need internet. And we didn't have internet in the 60s, and that's, you know, and cable and all of those new amenities that is being forced down people's throats.
Well, if I can continue, the third priority for us is the licensing of association managers. In Maryland, anybody can become an association manager. You don't have to have any credentials. And that seems quite remiss.
That's something that was done here in Virginia last year. I don't know that it's going to make the managers any better, any smarter. I mean, look at who's going to be doing the training and the teaching.
But isn't it possible to at least file a complaint when you have an
that's the only thing. But who'd you file the complaint to?
Well, whoever's taking the licensing, we have, labor and licensing in Maryland that this licensing would come under. And we'd have someone that the homeowner could file a complaint with and some type of oversight.
CAI?
It's a start.
CAI, because that's what's happening here.
CAI may be in the training business, but I think the state of Maryland would be, if we can get this bill passed, would be licensing the managers and then would be responsible. The problem is, truly, the bottom line is there is no enforcement unless the homeowner goes to court and enforces the law himself. So just to have some state agency that's licensing, then you have someone that may do something to enforce when we have a problem. That's the hope anyway.
Well, the way it works in Virginia, CAI is on that panel, and CAI is going to be the one deciding. So you've got, you know, you've got management company A with employee managers, and somebody files a complaint, and they go to, you know, that maybe to one of their colleagues in the same management company, and they're sitting on the board, on the panel.
That is a problem.
It is a problem.
Yeah.
And you know, that's pretty much the way that things are being done nowadays, unfortunately.
Well, maybe we can hope that things will change. I notice in Common Ground, which is the CAI magazine, I think I've seen two or three examples where they have withdrawn the credentials of a CAI trained manager. The person has to embezzle thousands of dollars to get to that point, but it's a start. It's a start.
Thousands of dollars. Well, that's better than the some million dollars.
Or that, yeah.
I know. I know. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and today we're talking to Jean Ketley, who's president of the Maryland Homeowners Association. And in the studio with me, we have Pat Wigington, who is a longtime member of the Maryland Homeowners Association. Ladies, thank you again for joining us today. And MHA seems to be about the only organization, homeowner-based organization out there this year that has had any success at all when it comes to getting some kind of homeowner legislation, homeowner-friendly legislation passed. So, again, congratulations, because that's been something that's been very difficult to get done.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Lots of hard work.
I bet.
Lots of problems.
I bet. And a big org. How big is MHA now? How many members do you have?
Several hundred, actually.
Yeah. If we were like CAI and we counted them, each homeowner in an association, the number would be quite large, but we don't do that.
Thank you.
Well, we don't. The other thing, Sue, if I may I mention our website, because there's all sorts of great information for Maryland homeowners in terms of trying to solve their problems. It's www.MarylandHomeownersAssociation.info. And we keep adding to it. We just want to empower people to try to solve their problems.
How can people get in touch with you, Jean?
We have a phone number. We have email access. If you go to the website, our phone number is 301-654-9242. And for email, you just send an email to mail@MarylandHomeownersAssociation.info.
And you'll get it.
And yeah. Everyone that calls in or writes in and gets help, we'd appreciate their membership. This is a membership-based organization, all volunteer homeowners who have experienced problems.
Mm-hmm. How involved are the members? Do they roll their sleeves up and get involved with lobbying for legislation or attending meetings or writing letters? Or
I think we have a very active membership. We have people that are enforcing the law themselves. We're winning cases. In Montgomery County, they have a commission on common ownership, which is where you go instead of court first, if you so choose, and it focuses specifically on condo and HOA problems. We've had people go there and win. We've had people go to court and win. We have people, many people that came down to Annapolis this year and spoke about their individual situations and just emphasized the problems. And we notify our members when there is legislation being heard that they need to let their elected representatives know how they feel on the issue, and we have had great success with an active membership calling and writing their elected representatives. I think that's probably why this House Bill 137 actually passed, because grassroots citizen organizations have an uphill battle.
Yep. Well, one of the things that we keep hearing is that, you know, the homeowners themselves really need to get involved. And again, congratulations, because I think that's a testament to how well MHA is being run, because you're getting people involved and you're getting people, you know, involved with trying to help you and help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often the homeowners don't want to get involved. They've got all these anonymous people running around out there, and they want you to fight their battles for them.
Well, there is that too, and one of my many gripes is that we do have people that come to us with a problem, we help them with their problem, and then they're gone.
Yeah.
They don't see the bigger picture.
Right.
And that's frustrating, because it's a difficult fight, and we need everyone that lives in an association and has experienced the problems in an association to step up to the plate and contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking money. Membership's $25 a year. We're talking expertise and volunteerism and sharing your experience with other homeowners. It's a big problem. We seem to be getting more calls and complaints than the Attorney General's office, according to their statistics.
They're just a few isolated incidents, right, Pat?
That's right. I figured I was doing some statistics the other day and counted probably 400 to 500 inquiries per year that we're handling. And the Attorney General told us maybe they had 30 or 40 complaints. So we tell everyone that calls to be sure and call the Attorney General's office too.
You know, I noticed in your newsletter, and you say any violations of these or other condo HOA laws should be reported to the Consumer Protection Division. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's a little different in Maryland. You have a Consumers Protection Division?
We do indeed. Jane, you want to talk to that?
No, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, the Attorney General's office has a Consumer Protection Branch, and that is the group that condo and HOA complaints are supposed to be directed to. The way it's generally handled are volunteers handle the calls that come into the office. And we recommend you can call, but we also recommend that anyone that has a complaint put it in writing and be sure to follow up on it, because it's like everything else. The squeaky wheel gets the grease, and there's limited resources. Certainly the Attorney General's office is not prepared to handle all the complaints that are out there, all the problems that are in associations. But if you make yourself heard and keep at it, we have seen some movement in the right direction from the Attorney General's office, in that they are trying to support the homeowners if there has been some law. State Maryland Condo or HOA Act is not being followed. They will not step in if there is something in the individual association documents, the declaration and bylaws. They're hands off on that, pretty much so. But if it's a violation of state law, and you are persistent enough to show them the problem and get them to hear you, then they will mediate. They will send a letter stating what the law is and recommending that the association follow the law. So we have seen some movement in the right direction that way.
That's about the only state that I've heard of that does that, because usually the government takes a very hands-off position and says, that's private property, you agreed, we're not going to get involved.
Well, I'd like to think that it's because the Maryland Homeowners Association has been at them since 1981, pushing them to do the right thing. But it is a budgetary matter. It's not that they don't know that these problems are out there, but resources are shared. And for instance, often the volunteers that answer the complaint lines are not specifically attuned to condo and HOA problems.
These are volunteers in the...
At the Attorney General's office,
oh,
yes.
Oh, really? They mm-hmm. don't have paid staff answering the phones?
No.
Oh.
They have some supervisors that are paid staff, but in general, they work with volunteers.
Well, that should help with the budget. You don't pay these people.
Yeah.
The other thing, one of the big problems that we keep hearing about this year is insurance across the board. From Florida, where, you know, they're supposed to have hurricane insurance and they can't get it and it's so expensive, and to all kinds of other problems with insurance. And I know, Pat, you had said that you worked on the insurance legislation this year.
Well, there are several insurance legislations that MHA was involved with. The one that I was particularly following has to do with condominium insurance. And it was in a bit of turmoil because a year ago, the Maryland Court of Appeals, which is the highest court in the state of Maryland, had ruled in a particular case called Anderson versus the Council of Unit Owners of the Gables on Tuckerman Condominium. They ruled in that case that the condominium association did not have to repair the property damage of a particular townhouse condominium. In fact, there were two cases that were combined. They both had to do with townhouses, and they both had to do with the fact that there had been water damage. One was an old water heater that had burst. Another was a grease fire where the sprinkler system kicked in and watered everything down. In both cases, the damage was contained within the individual townhouse, and the homeowners, with their attorney or the insurance company's attorney, was saying that the association was required by law to make the units whole again at common expense. The court ruled that that was not the case. That turned on its head 20 years of insurance law and the interpretation of condominium insurance law in the state of Maryland. So the legislature took a look this year to remedy that, because in the interim, people, insurance agents, unit owners, condominium boards of directors, managers, no one really knew how best to attack this problem. And what the legislature decided was to reinstate what had been the law previously and make it clear that it was their intention that in common ownership housing, the association is responsible not only for the common elements, repair of the common elements, but also the individual units. That does not include the betterments and improvements, and it does not include the personal property of the owners. But the association is responsible to make the condominium whole. This is a percentage interest in a whole that people buy into. So if one person's townhouse in the middle of a row of townhouses is burnt out or flooded and becomes mold infested, you're affecting your entire association.
Mm-hmm.
So the legislature said this was their intent 20 years ago, and it's their intent today, that the association is responsible for the welfare of the entire property, common elements and individual units. The twist to that is that in order to handle the attitudes that a lot of times it's the individual's problem, the individual's negligence that has caused this water damage, that the other homeowners should not be responsible for that bill. To handle that feeling, the legislature agreed to a kind of a hybrid type law, which makes it that the master policy deductible, which can run anywhere from zero to $25,000 or more.
Wow.
That deductible up to, and they put a cap on it, up to $5,000, will be the responsibility of the individual homeowner where the problem originated. Not negligence or fault, but origination. That's kind of got, that's a compromise. That's holding people responsible whether they're responsible or not.
Yeah.
But it's also holding people responsible that are responsible. if they let their bathtub overflow, they're going to pay the first $5,000. And that will maybe get some people's attention. They hope it will instill some responsibility. Personally, I don't like it. I spoke out against it. I think it's not consumer friendly. But it's a done deal now.
I can see if you are careless being responsible because the other your neighbors shouldn't have to share in that. But it would seem to me that if the if you have construction defects, if you have all kinds of other problems that are not something that's controllable by the individual unit owner, it just doesn't seem fair that they should foot the bill.
I agree with you. And hopefully individual associations will handle it in a more equitable way, but they don't have to.
They don't have to. The law says that. I can't see an association saying, oh, that's okay. We'll take care of that.
Well, we had an MHA board member who was a retired attorney who, I'll quote you what he said, liability without fault is extremely rare in insurance law. But that's what we've got in Maryland now.
I have a comment about that.
Uh-huh.
Deductible, which is that there have been all sorts of lawsuits going on between neighbors as to who is responsible and who isn't responsible, and between associations and neighbors and three ways and four ways. And what this does at least is make it crystal clear where the deductible is going to lie. And I think it saves everybody a lot of money in a way when you don't have to do all these legal lawsuits.
That's true. That one of the reasons that was given at the time that the legislature adopted this law was clarity, and we do have clarity.
Mm-hmm.
It's you've got clarity.
Yes, we do. Let's have to see how it works.
All right. Would this wouldn't include stuff like construction defects? Would that it be included as well, so the developer comes in and does a shoddy job and the homeowner ends up having to put the first $5,000?
I don't know specifically on construction defects and construction warranties, but I suspect that some of the problems that we have been hearing about and the reason that this was such a big issue in Annapolis, even before the court's case, we were dealing with this issue of who's going to pay the master policy deductible. I suspect that there are a lot of associations out there that have had shoddy workmanship. And the reason I understand that 90% of these insurance claims are water problems. I suspect that a lot of the pipes that people are dealing with are substandard. It's unfortunate, but once again, the homeowner is the one that's going to foot the bill.
Can a homeowner on their own private policy include the deductible?
Yes.
So they can. It's not going to have necessarily be an out-of-pocket expense.
It doesn't have to be an out-of-pocket expense. The quote that I got from my insurance company was about $50 for the $5,000 deductible coverage. Mm-hmm. I think Jean was talking $10 for $1,000.
For $1,000, that's right.
Yeah.
So that's about the right range.
So, but if you look at the numbers of homeowners in the state of Maryland, and everybody's going to put this out of pocket, you're talking millions of dollars.
And who? Yeah.
But
yeah.
You've got. Clarity.
But it's one homeowner at a time. So it's a small, it's not a big expense for any one homeowner. And as Jean said, it's supposedly going to prevent a lot of the
litigation
between
and the CAI attorneys like this bill.
This was very definitely a CAI industry-sponsored bill.
It would seem to me that the attorneys would be out of pocket for all the litigation that it's going to prevent.
I'm not an attorney, Sue. I don't know.
I'm not either. I just play one on the air once a week. So, Jean, the recommendation is that everybody in Maryland check this out and make sure that they've got coverage so they don't get left holding the baby?
Absolutely. Everyone should make sure they have coverage and they should talk to their agent. But one part of this legislation is that it requires the association to annually notify the homeowners of their responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. And this is the law, and it supersedes anything to the contrary in the governing
document. It supersedes everything, and it's effective this past June 1st. As soon as they got it passed, they made it effective.
You don't have to change governing documents. I had a manager tell me it's nice to change the documents. Well, you don't have to. Don't spend the money.
Interesting.
And the interesting thing, too, Sue, is that generally state law supersedes your documents, and everyone should know that. When you're looking at your documents, you should also put it side by side with the state law. Occasionally, the state law will say, unless your documents say otherwise.
The reason that they claim they can't get involved is because it's a private contract. Now, when the law supersedes your governing documents, there's a definite interference in contract there. And, you know, they've been very, very careful to say if your governing documents are silent, then the law applies. But otherwise, your governing documents.
Well, in this particular instance, a year ago, they passed legislation that made the master policy deductible up to $5,000, the responsibility of the individual, if the association chose to change their bylaws. Mm-hmm. Now, I personally know of a couple associations that had that discussion, and the homeowners voted no. What I heard when I went to Annapolis was that it was too difficult to get the homeowners together to understand the problem, to vote, you know, to change. Well, I think these homeowners understood the problem, and they decided they didn't choose to go this new direction.
That's right.
But the state has mandated it now, and that's the law.
Before I forget, and I've got you two ladies on the line with me here, let me just let you know about something that's in the CAI pipeline. There was a bill that they tried to get through last year in emergency session, and the only reason it didn't pass last year was because they didn't consider it an emergency. It did fail when it was introduced again this year, and what this would do is if a board decided that they needed to change the governing documents, this is for you, Jean, if a board needed to change the governing documents and they made a reasonable attempt three times to get the members to approve the changes and the members failed to do so, then the association board could go, and this doesn't even mean that they have to put it to a vote. They can go to court and get a judge to make those changes.
Now, what about if the homeowners say, no, we've listened to you and we don't want to change them?
And they can do that three times, and they can still go over the homeowners' heads.
That's awful. I mean, I would object. Absolutely.
We'll keep our eyes open in Maryland.
Please do so, because this is something that CAI is pushing very, very hard. And I have it on good authority that it was something that was discussed at the law seminar, and the attorneys were told, don't worry, we're going to have this legislation. Also, the other thing is that they don't want this bill in with the HOA or condo laws. They want it in some other part of the code to make it a little more difficult for you guys to find it.
You're going
to
put it in corporation someplace?
It doesn't matter. They're just going to put it in the code someplace. They'll know where it is. And nobody
will be watching.
We'll watch.
But I have to tell you, several years ago, we missed, and I still don't know how, we didn't see what happened. I don't even know who did it, but in Maryland we had an open records law for condominiums that said all records are open,
mm-hmm.
no exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
About 5 years ago, somehow there appeared some exceptions. And actually, this House Bill 137 that we started off the program with, one of the exceptions had to do with personnel records, which boards of directors and managers chose to interpret to mean employees' salaries as well. Well, that's something that MHA members had gone to court and had the established right to see employees' salaries, because it was said open records are open records.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're trying very hard to get back into law some of these things that we lost unbeknownst to us. So
what Pat is saying is we got the salary information back to be available.
Yes, part of this 137 now allows, specifically says, salary information is open.
So individual salaries are available to you.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
It's not aggregate salaries.
Not aggregate, individual salaries. Because, of course, the homeowners are paying the bills.
Absolutely.
That are paying these salaries. But the interpretation, as Jean said earlier, managers were abusing the law to do what they wanted to do. And in this particular case, they were interpreting personnel records to include things that they didn't care to share.
You had some other bills that did not pass. We're kind of, believe it or not, ladies, we're running out of time, but I did want to touch on a few bills, and I think one of them, the energy conservation bill.
That was very controversial.
You know, there's an organization out there called the Laundry List, Project
Yes.
Laundry List.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this was started by Alexander Lee, and he has been working tirelessly for years to get people to hang their clothes up on clotheslines.
Mm-hmm.
And so did MHA support this bill? What was the story on this bill?
The bills, and there were more than one of them, were very heavily sponsored. I mean, there were like 15 various delegates and senators' names on them.
Oh, really?
And yeah, they were sort of, as someone described it to me, a feel-good bill. I mean, so lots
uh-huh.
of people signed on. We discussed it at length because, of course, we worry about architectural continuity and et cetera. But after quite a bit of discussion, we decided to support the right to dry, with the board having the authority to say where clotheslines would be and what type of clotheslines they would be. But we supported it.
What about other conservation measures that are out there, people wanting to put up solar panels mm-hmm. and awnings?
I think solar panels was approved last year by the Maryland
Legislature.
That's correct.
It has?
Yeah. Yeah, an association cannot restrict a solar panel on a freestanding house, on a single-family house. And along with that went solar rights. And this is kind of interesting in that no one has a right to put anything up in your sunlight, and that you can negotiate with the person that wants to do that. I think it has more ramifications than initially assumed. This the fact that you can kind of negotiate your right to solar energy.
Oh, that's an interesting thing. I never even thought about that.
Yeah. Well, think about it. I mean, you can put a panel up, but if they put a 20-story apartment house right
absolutely.
In front of you, you don't have any sun anymore.
Absolutely.
So yeah, think about it, Chu.
I know. I am. I think that's interesting that you have the power to negotiate that.
And we all have to think about the energy
absolutely.
Conservation thing.
Well, I mean, there's so many different things. There's like xeriscaping, where people plant native plants that don't need to be watered as often to conserve mm-hmm. water. You've mm-hmm. got places where, you know, in the Southwest where it's very hot and air conditioning bills run, you know, huge bills. Associations do not allow awnings. They do not allow roller blinds. They do not allow anything that would help keep the heat out and the cool in.
Mm-hmm.
And windmills. I mean, there's any number of measures that people can use
right.
to conserve energy, and associations seem to fight every one of them.
Well, this was one that you mentioned in CAI. They were opposed. They wanted they don't want a mandate for clothes drying, but they wanted a mandate for insurance.
Mhm. Mhm.
Yeah. That sounds.
I think we'd have to think about them on a case by case, but I could see MHA certainly supporting environmentally positive legislation. But I really think the associations need to really look carefully at where the world is going and be proactive rather than reactive to these kinds of things.
I mean, you've had cases where the association has banned people from having composting.
I don't know of an example. Do you, Pat?
I don't know about composting.
Yeah.
I know about the clothes drying.
Mm-hmm.
One of the large associations in Montgomery County in Maryland is Montgomery Village, and they have on an individual association basis some allow clotheslines. They're very restrictive rules on it. They have to be the kind of line that you can put up and take down. And it needed to be taken down by 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I assume that's when everyone came home, sat out in their backyard and had a drink and didn't want to look at your underwear.
They're no fun, are they?
But at least they allowed it, Chu.
That's true. That's true.
A lot of places do not.
Now, there were a lot of articles that were written recently about the right to dry, and I know that Maryland had... there was a lot of stuff coming out of Maryland from different homeowners in Maryland.
Well, interestingly, there was also some opposition from, and I'm trying to think what the name of it is. It's like a group of town managers, or it wasn't associations. It was municipal organizations that didn't want the legislature telling them what they could do inside their city limits or their town limits. And I was a bit surprised by that. But this bill has just come out this past year. It'll be back, and we'll have more time to see what the pros and cons are.
We've got about a minute left. Is there anything that quickly you want to let your listeners know?
I'd just like to have you thank you, Chu, for having us on. And anyone that's in Maryland listening to us, please call and join MHA.
Jean, thank
I'll
you.
I'll endorse that. Thank you very much, Chu. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you for all the hard work that you guys do, because you're setting an example for the rest of the state. And again, congratulations on being the only state that I know of. I mean, there may be others, but I haven't heard of them, that has got some homeowner-friendly legislation passed this year.
Good for us.
Good for you, absolutely.
We'll try for more next year.
Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life.
I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.